Today is Thursday, February 21st, 2008. This is the ninth day of the 2008 budget session of the 59th Wyoming Legislature. Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden.
Here.
Anderson.
Here.
Bagby.
Here.
Berger.
Here.
Blake.
Here.
Brechtel.
Here.
Brown.
Here.
Buchanan.
Here.
Childers.
Here.
Kraft.
Here.
Davison.
Here.
Dirks.
Here.
Dockstetter.
Here.
Edmonds.
Here.
Edwards.
Here.
Esquivel F. Esquivel K.
Here.
Gilmore.
Here.
Gingery.
Here.
Goggles.
Here.
Hales.
Here.
Hallinan.
Here.
Hammonds.
Here.
Harshman.
Here.
Harvey.
Here.
Eichel.
Excused.
Eichel excused. Illaway.
Here.
Yagi.
Here.
Jones.
Here.
Jorgensen.
Here.
Landon.
Here.
Lockhart.
Here.
Lubnow.
Here.
Madden.
Here.
Martin.
Here.
McComey.
Here.
Mercer.
Here.
Meyer.
Here.
Miller.
Miller, here.
Millen,
here.
Olson,
here.
Peterson,
here.
Philp,
here.
Korberg,
here.
Samuelson,
here.
Simlick,
here.
Shepperson,
here.
Simpson,
here.
Slater,
here.
Stewart,
here.
Stevenson,
here.
Teeters,
here.
Thompson,
here.
Throne,
here.
Wallace,
here.
Warren,
here.
White, White, Zwanitzer Dan,
here.
Zwanitzer Dave,
here.
Mr. Speaker.
Here.
White.
Our blessing for the day will be offered by the Reverend Robin Chance, representing St. Christopher's Episcopal Church of Cheyenne. Reverend Chance.
Let us pray. Direct us, mighty Spirit, in all our doings with your most gracious favor, and further us with your continual help, that in all our works begun, continued, and ended in you, we may glorify your holy name as we seek your will in all the business here in the House of Representatives, in our communities, our families, and in our lives. Amen.
Please join me in our... Members of the House, in the words of the country and western artist Jerry Reed, we've got a long ways to go and a short time to get there. So, The reading clerk will read the Journal Committee report.
Mr. Speaker, your Journal Committee reports that the Journal of February 20th, 2008 has been read and recommends that it be approved. Signed, Representative Teeters, Representative Millen.
Our doctor of the day will be Dr. Amy Trelease Bell from Cheyenne. Our nurse of the day will be Representative Tim Hallinan. Thank you for your service to the state. Members of the House, we are at that order of business of Senate files on first reading. The first Senate file for our consideration is Senate File 10.
Senate File 10, introduced by the Mental Health.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to mental health and substance abuse appropriations.
Senate File 10 is referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 21.
Senate File 21, introduced by the Education Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Hathaway Scholarship Program.
Senate File 21 is referred to Committee Number 4, Education. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 43.
Senate File 43, introduced by Senator Geis.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to contagious and infectious diseases among livestock.
Senate File 43 is referred to Committee Number 5, Agriculture. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 51.
Senate File 51, introduced by Senator Jennings.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to game and fish regarding mentor-hunter program.
Senate File 51 is referred to Committee Number 6, Travel. The next bill for our consideration is Senate File 25.
Senate File 25, introduced by the Transportation Committee.
First reading of the bill.
An act relating to the Wyoming National Guard Life Insurance Contribution Option.
Senate File 25 is referred to Committee Number 8, Transportation. We are at that order of business of bills on second reading. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 73.
House Bill 73, introduced by Representative Mercer, an act relating to driving while under the influence, DUI penalties.
There is an amendment. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 73. This goes to page 2, line 20, and deletes the words "or release on any other basis." I do believe it is important to give the sentencing judge the flexibility to allow for non-consecutive day service of any sentence, which can include work release or service on weekends. And I just believe that the realities of the criminal justice system and the realities of people's lives oftentimes require the judge to have that discretion, and I believe that this takes care of that. And I have there's another bill coming up on third reading where I would plan to do the same thing.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would consider this a friendly amendment, but I would also leave it to the discretion of the body as to whether or not you choose to enact it. Thank you.
Further discussion. Representative Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I'm not necessarily against the amendment. My only question is when we have the mandatory 7 days under the DUI law, or we're going to see that again in our domestic violence penalties legislation, we put in there "or release on any other basis" to make clear that 7 days cannot be suspended, because in the criminal justice system, even though we might put we call something a mandatory minimum sentence, that can simply mean, if we said mandatory minimum of 30 days to 6 months, a judge could say you're sentenced to 30 days, not less than 30 days, and maybe just leave it at that, and then they can still suspend that unless we make it clear. And so I like the idea of the amendment to say that they can serve it on work release or serve it on weekends if that's the intent. But we have to be careful that we are still clear that the minimum sentence we put in there has to be served rather than suspended. And that's my only concern, and if that could be addressed, I'm good.
Further discussion prior to the sponsor of the amendment. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. If you look at the language on page 2, lines 18 through 20, you'll see that the language or suspension of sentence is not removed. So a person convicted of a second offense shall not be eligible for probation or suspension of sentence. This does not give the judge the authority to suspend any part of that minimum mandatory sentence.
The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 73. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed signify by saying no. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 73 has been adopted. House Bill 73 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 74.
House Bill 74 introduced by Representatives Wanitzer Dan, an act relating to veterinarians regarding veterinarian loan repayment program.
House Bill 74, having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 92.
House Bill 92, introduced by the Revenue Committee, an act relating to taxation and revenue regarding property tax refund program.
There is an amendment. Representative Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker, members of the House. In my committee, the whole amendment yesterday, as you might recall, we tried to give the House an opportunity to consider streamlining the application process for the tax refund relief proposal in House Bill 92. And in that amendment, there was some concern that the word immediately following would maybe not accomplish what we intended to do there. What we're trying to accomplish is that you can apply for this refund the first year, and then in the subsequent years, you won't have to refile. You just have to file an affidavit affirming that nothing has changed. So in this amendment, we're taking the word immediately out and trying to add some clarity to that amendment to make sure that it accomplishes what we intended it to do. So we ask for your favorable consideration. Thank you.
Further discussion. The motion is to adopt second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 92. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no. Second reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 92 has been adopted. House Bill 92 having been read two separate times, the question is, shall the bill be read a third time? Hearing no objection, it is so ordered. Members of the House, I got things out of order a little bit this morning. Now we're going to have reports from standing committees.
Mr. Speaker, Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 88, respectfully reports same back to the House with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Jones, Jorgensen, Peterson, Philp, Warren, signed representing Philp, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 105, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Jones, Jorgensen, Peterson, Philp, Warren, signed Representative Philp, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred House Bill 155, respectfully report same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass with the following amendments. Ayes, Berger, Jorgensen, Philp, Warren, no. Harshman, Jones, Peterson, signed Representative Philp, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 2, Appropriations, to whom was referred Senate File 68, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Jones, Jorgensen, Peterson, Philp, Warren, no. Harshman, signed Representative Philp, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your Committee Number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 106, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Brechtel, Edmonds, Samuelson, Semlich, Teeters, Zwanitzer, Dan, No. Blake Dirks Wallace. Signed, Representative Samuelson, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Bill 169, respectfully reports same back to the House with recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Dirks, Edmonds, Samuelson, Semlich, Teeters, Wallace, Wanitzer, Dan. No. Brechtel. Signed, Representative Samuelson, Chairman. Mr. Speaker, your committee number 5, Agriculture, Public Lands, and Water Resources, to whom was referred House Joint Resolution number 10, respectfully report same back to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Blake, Brechtel, Dirks, Edmonds, Samuelson, Semlich, Teeters, Wallace, Swanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representative Samuelson, Chairman.
We are now at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading consent list of House Bill 13, House Bill 22, House Bill 45, House Bill 46, House Bill 48, House Bill 67, House Bill 76, House Bill 78, House Bill 85, House Bill 109, and House Bill 122.
Are there any members wishing to remove any of these bills from the consent list? Hearing none, the reading clerk will read the consent list bills.
Mr. Speaker.
Representative Teeters.
I would move to have House Bill 109 removed from the consent list.
Without objection, House Bill 109 is removed from the consent list and will be put on today's regular list. Now the reading clerk will read the bills through the enacting clause.
House Bill 13, introduced by the Mental Health, an act relating to the Wyoming State Board of Psychologists regarding licensure, being enacted by legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 22, introduced by Representative Madden, an act relating to highways regarding failure to observe road closure, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 45, introduced by Representative Berger, an act relating to film incentives, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 46, introduced by Representative Berger, an act relating to abuse of animals, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 48, introduced by Representative Berger, an act relating to state loan and investment board loans, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 67, introduced by the Tribal Relations and Education and relating to education, intertribal education, and community center, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 76, introduced by Representative Stewart, an act relating to crimes and offenses regarding criminal street gangs, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 78, introduced by Representative Semlich, an act relating to highways regarding county road fund, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 85, introduced by the Representative Olson, an act relating to agriculture and animals regarding brucellosis testing program, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming. House Bill 122, introduced by Representative Samuelson, an act relating to crimes and offenses regarding game wardens' enforcement of littering provisions, being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall House Bill 13, House Bill 22, House Bill 45, House Bill 46, House Bill 48, House Bill 67, House Bill 76, House Bill 78, House Bill 85, and House Bill 122 pass the House? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden.
Aye.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Berger.
Aye.
Blake.
Aye.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Childers. Kraft,
aye.
Davison,
aye.
Dirks,
aye.
Dockstetter,
aye.
Edmonds,
aye.
Edwards,
aye.
Esquivel F,
aye.
Esquivel K,
aye.
Gilmore,
aye.
Gingery,
aye.
Goggles,
aye.
Hales,
aye.
Hallinan,
aye.
Hammonds,
aye.
Harshman,
aye.
Harvey,
aye.
Eichel excused, Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jones,
aye.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lubno,
aye.
Madden, Martin,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Miller,
aye.
Millen,
aye.
Olson,
aye.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
aye.
Korberg,
aye.
Samuelson,
aye.
Semlich,
aye.
Shepperson.
Aye.
Simpson.
Aye.
Slater.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
Aye.
Warren.
Aye.
White. Swanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Swanitzer Dave.
Aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 1 excused, 1 absent. As to House Bill 13, are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 1 excused, 1 absent. As to House Bill 22, are there any changes? Philp, aye to no. Brechtel, aye to no. Teeters, aye to no. Shepperson, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 54 ayes, 4 noes, 1 excused, 1 absent. As to House Bill 45, are there any changes? Are there any changes? Dockstetter, aye to no. Brechtel, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 56 ayes, 2 noes, 1 excused, 1 absent. As to House Bill 46, are there any changes? Brechtel, aye to no. Teeters, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 56 ayes, 2 noes, 1 excused, 1 absent. As to House Bill 48, are there any changes? Brechtel, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 57 ayes, 1 no, 1 excused, 1 absent. As to House Bill 67, are there any changes? Korberg, aye to no. Swanitzer Dan, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 56 ayes, 2 noes, 1 excused, 1 absent. As to House Bill 76, are there any changes? Alden, aye to no. Korberg, aye to no. Teeters, aye to no. Miller, aye to no. Gilmore, aye to no. Olson, aye to no. Throne, aye to no. Harshman, aye to no. Shepperson, aye to no. Brechtel, aye to no. Hallinan, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 47 ayes, 11 noes, 1 excused, 1 absent. As to House Bill 78, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 1 excused, 1 absent. As to House Bill 85, are there any changes? Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 58 ayes, 1 excused, 1 absent. As to House Bill 122, are there any changes? Davison, aye to no. Dirks, aye to no. Brechtel, aye to no. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 55 ayes, 3 noes, 1 excused, 1 absent.
Having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 13, House Bill 22, House Bill 45, House Bill 46, House Bill 48, House Bill 67, House Bill 76, House Bill 78, House Bill 85, and House Bill 122 have passed the House. We are now at that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 43.
Oh, pardon me, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. The first bill for our consideration is House Bill 43.
House Bill 43, introduced by Representative Berger, an act relating to crimes and offenses regarding penalties for domestic violence. being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I move third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 43. Ladies and gentlemen, yesterday the Standing Committee amendment added language to line 24 on page 2 that indicated someone who was found guilty of a second offense would not be eligible for probation, suspension of sentence, or release on any other basis until he has served at least 7 days in jail. My amendment would take out the "or released on any other basis" so the judge would have the discretion to grant work release or other service. He would not be allowed, or the judge would not be allowed, to suspend any part of the sentence, so you would still have the minimum 7 days required. Thank you.
Representative Berger.
Mr. Chairman, this would be a friendly amendment.
Further discussion? The motion is to adopt third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 43. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no. House Bill 43, having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the...
Mr. Speaker.
Pardon me. Third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 43 has passed. We have an amendment. Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Mr. Speaker, I move third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 43. My hope was that this would be a friendly amendment. Given the last amendment, I feel a little less concerned. But, Mr. Speaker, we didn't really have a lot of time to work these amendments, as everybody knows. But the purpose of this amendment was to provide a level of discretion to the judge concerning mandatory sentencing, especially if there's an opportunity for probation and anger management. My concern stems around the unintended consequences to the biggest victims in these cases, and that's those people who, you know, number one, were potentially taking more money away from these folks, but even worse, the possibility of somebody losing their job and that family losing their source of income. Just one real quick case in my own neighborhood, watching a family. It's so neat to see this family out almost every evening, either building snowmen or playing softball, mom, dad, and kids all playing together, and it's a wonderful setting. And it's reaching a point now where they will soon be empty nesters, but it hasn't always been that way. I've lived in my same home for 30 years, and I watched this family move in as just a new couple. Kids began to appear, and pretty soon there was violence like you wouldn't believe. We saw police cars. I mean, it was terrifying, some of the things that seemed to be going on there. But over the long haul, it wasn't this kind of policy that fixed their problem. It was community. It was community involvement that changed these people's lives. This type of policy would, I'm absolutely certain, would have devastated this family. So I would appreciate your consideration of this amendment. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Discussion on the amendment. The motion is to adopt a third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill. Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Sorry, I was a little slow getting up. I would urge you to vote no on this amendment. These are folks that it's their second time. This isn't your first time beating up your wife or other household members. This is the second time you've been caught doing it. Sometimes you need 7 days to cool your jets and get your head straight and then enter into some type of therapy. It's not as if we're just sticking them in for 7 days and calling it good. It's 7 days, and with the previous amendment, potentially they're not losing their job because of the previous amendment offered by the Majority Floor Leader. They can do this now on the weekends. A schedule can be worked out. for their days off, so that they're serving some time and they realize that there are consequences. These guys are good. I mean, they are so good at talking their way out of this stuff. They didn't do it. They didn't mean to. She antagonized me. I had to set her straight. These guys need to cool their jets occasionally. And you have them, and the only way they're going to take this counseling seriously is if they know there's the potential for some consequences, and the consequences being sitting in jail. So I would urge you to vote no on this. I think we've already fixed the problem with them losing their jobs with the previous amendment. Thank you.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, on and for the amendment, I believe the good representative from Jackson may be reading it differently than I read it. The way I read it is that the probation must include mandatory anger management counseling, or you don't get probation. It doesn't say anything about whether you have to serve the minimum mandatory 7 days. You still have to serve that, but any term of probation has to include mandatory anger management. And maybe the sponsor could clarify that, but that's the way I read it.
Further discussion prior to the bill's amendment sponsor. Representative Brechtel.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. This, again, is just another tool to allow the judge some discretion in providing a little bit of leniency to make sure that this family stays as whole as possible. And let me remind this body that it isn't always the first or second time that these things generally get straightened out, and sometimes you can't tell who threw the first punch. But I would really appreciate it if you give this some serious consideration. Let's give the judge a little bit more latitude. Thanks.
The motion is to adopt a third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 43. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no.
No.
All of those in favor of third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 43, please stand. Third reading amendment number 2 to House Bill 43 has been adopted. House Bill 43 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Anderson. Bagby. Berger. Blake. Brechtel. Brown. Buchanan. Childers. Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Dockstetter, Edmonds, Edwards, Esquivel F, Esquivel K, Gilmore, Gingery, Goggles, Hales, Hallinan, Hammonds, Harshman, Harvey, Eichel excused, Illaway, Yagi, Jones, Jorgensen, Landon, Lockhart, Lubno, Madden, Martin, McComey, Mercer, Meyer, Miller, Millen, Olson, Peterson, Philp, Korberg, Samuelson, Simlick, Shepperson, Simpson, Slater, Stewart, Stebson, Teeters, Thompson, Throne, Wallace, Warren, White, Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave, Mr. Speaker, Davison, I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 59 ayes, 1 excused.
House Bill 43, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House, House Bill 43 has passed the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 97.
House Bill 97, introduced by Representative Lubno. An act relating to juvenile hearings being enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
There is an amendment. Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would move third reading amendment number one to House Bill 97. It's been mentioned that bringing this amendment at this point in time is, at a minimum, gutsy. It does make some pretty significant changes to what we've done to this bill throughout the last couple of readings. Part of the reason it came so late is because this is a pretty complicated subject, and we needed to work through some of the glitches. This bill, if you'll recall, talks about juvenile hearings and the continuances that we have in those juvenile processes when someone has either had a CHINS petition filed on them, has been accused of abuse and neglect against their child, or if there's a delinquency action. And so all three of those are addressed in this bill and in this amendment. If you look on page one of the amendment, you'll see starting on line 24, I've changed some of the information on here to say that if the child is placed out of the home and the petition is denied, the court shall set a time frame not to exceed 90 days. So we've gone ahead and stuck with that longer time frame, the 90 days, and starting the time counting when the petition is denied. So we have expanded the time frames on the front end of this and on the back end of this. But the next thing I do in here is I say that if the child remains in the home and the petition is denied, the court shall have a time period not to exceed 90 days for the adjudicatory hearing, unless the court finds good cause for the delay. And that way the court, if they do need a little extra time, if the child is still in the home, they can go ahead and have that little bit of extra time. The main point of this amendment is that these are basically drop-dead time frames. If you don't have your petition in there and your hearing done, as the prosecutor, as the agency that deals with families, as the court, if it wasn't important enough to get it in there and get it done, then it goes away and you can't refile it. You can't simply dismiss and refile. The bill as it currently sits would allow for dismissal and refiling for whatever reason might come forward. It could be a docket glitch. It could be a prosecutorial glitch. It could be an agency glitch. And if a case is important enough to be in there messing around in a family, we need to get it in there, get it done, take care of it, and move forward. We are not trying to say you have to fix all the problems in a family within this 90-day or 120-day period. What this says is that we are trying to say there's a petition, there are allegations on that petition. You are proving those allegations. You are not proving the allegations plus everything that happened after that. So when you walk in to file that petition, that's what you're proving. And you've got 90 or 120 days to get in there and get that hearing done. And the reason we put these time frames on here is because families and children are important. They should not be languishing outside the home while people are trying to get their ducks in a row, folks. And sometimes that's happening. And it's happening often enough that we are hurting families, and it is not okay to do that. Now, the system in requesting this bill had come in and said, we're having difficulty with our time frames. They were 60 and 90 days. We've moved that to 90 and 120. They believe that's more reasonable. They believe they can work with that better, and so I would not oppose that at all. I think that we need to make sure that they can work within the time frames we give them. But when we give them time frames, those time frames should mean something. This amendment, you can read through it, and you can see the language is the same basically all the way through it for all of the sections that the bill talks about. So it does the same thing for every single one of those kinds of actions. And I would stand for questions.
Mr. Speaker, pro tem.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. I would urge you as vehemently as I possibly can to resist this amendment. One of the things that we can't do is put booby traps in our statutes that work manifest injustice. And I don't share the distrust of the district courts and our prosecutors. Think about what these cases are. These are child abuse and neglect cases where parents have been alleged to have done some of the worst crime, committed some of the worst acts against their children, so bad that the state of Wyoming has gone into their house and taken their children away. So you take that child molester, you remove the children from the house, and then you look at the language that, well, on the first page line, in lines 33, 34, and 34, if the hearing's not held within the time period specified in this subsection, through no fault of the respondent, the petition shall be dismissed and not be refiled. The defense, it comes the day for the trial or the hearing. The defense attorney just chooses not to show up. It's not the respondent's fault. The prosecutor dies. The judge dies. Any number of scenarios, not the fault of the respondent, all of a sudden we're letting child molesters off scot-free and we can't refile the charges. It's a drop-dead thing. And so what we have to do then is we have to put those kids back in the home with the parents who are abusing them. And those charges are never to be refiled again. And so over and over and over again, those kids are abused again until they get caught. And we can't refile on the prior charges because we've given them immunity here. This amendment will hurt children if we pass it. And I would urge you not to pass this amendment.
Representative Olson.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. You know, I just heard something about if the defense attorney doesn't show up, it goes away. Well, on the amendment, line 34, through no fault of the respondent. If the defense does not show up, it doesn't go away. That is not true. And we're not talking about, you know, we heard some phrases about child molesters. Abusing children. No, that's not what this is. That's not what where we're going with this. What we're going with this is that, listen, we've given time on each side, each end. Let's come to a determination, and let the families be whole. If during the time frames we don't have the information, we don't have the proof of something, then let's be done with it. And quite frankly, if something's going on in that home. The department will be there again in short time to where they probably could serve something, do something on and for the amendment. And let's make sure that we read what the amendment says.
Representative Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment, ladies and gentlemen, the only problem I have with the amendment is on the lines 33, 34, and 35, and you see that in every section. Every section is basically the same in this big, long amendment, so you can really look at just the first one and get the gist of everything. And we have to remember what the original purpose of the bill was, and that was mainly in jurisdictions that don't have a sitting court district judge, and you're unable to get these hearings within the current parameters of the law. And so we checked to see if we would be in violation of federal law, and it was if we changed the timelines, and we found that we would not. But the reason I have the problem with the language in 33, 34, and 35 are many of the same reasons that the good representative from House District 31 had. And just to push back gently on the comments made by the representative from House District 22, you know, these are often cases about, you know, sometimes neglect can mean lots of things and the definition is very broad, but under the neglect statutes, it's neglect and abuse. And a lot of times there are cases where an act occurred in, say, Colorado, and so that jurisdiction has criminal jurisdiction over the case to file a crime against the perpetrator. Let's say it's a sexual assault. But the people live in Wyoming. But the girl was assaulted or molested on a trucking trip to Colorado. Colorado has criminal jurisdiction. Wyoming does not. However, I can protect that child in the state of Wyoming because she lives here, and I can protect her under the abuse and neglect statutes. So with this language in 33, 34, and 35, if for whatever reason, if it's the docket, if it's the fact that the defense attorney doesn't show up, which has happened. It's also happened. I did a jury trial once without the mother. She went to Maine and wouldn't show up, and we continued on without her. But if we miss our deadline with this language, then in the case and the scenario, which, by the way, is real, I'm not making up, the hypothetical going to Colorado, if we can't get that case into court, if something happens with the judge's schedule, if the defense attorney doesn't show up, if we need more time to gather our evidence, then this case is dismissed and it cannot be refiled. So in order to protect that girl in the neglect statutes, I have to wait till something else happens to her again. It makes absolutely no sense on and against the amendment.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. On and against the amendment. And to understand this, you have to look at the standing committee amendment and the one that we have here in front of us and understand this, that the district court judges brought this issue forward and they said, listen, we're having trouble meeting these deadlines. And essentially what the original bill was saying, get rid of the deadlines. The judiciary committee pushed back and said, no, we won't get rid of the deadlines because we still believe that the highest priority in our district courts is juvenile cases. These are the only cases that we set timelines on. And we said, you're going to have to clear your docket and do your juvenile court cases first. But we will extend them. And that's what the amendment did, the standing committee amendment. We took 60, went to 90. And then if there was good cause shown, you could actually move it out to 120. The difficulty with this amendment, number one, I'm not sure why it's making a distinction about whether or not the child's in the home or out of the home. That's handled through a different hearing called a shelter care hearing. So the child has definitely been to court previously on that issue. The real problem with this entire amendment is, again, what the good chairman of judiciary was just saying is lines 33 through 35, this provision that says, if a hearing is not held within the time period specified in this subsection through no fault of the respondent, the petition shall be dismissed and may not be refiled. Now, that's not the normal language we would use. Usually it would say would be dismissed with prejudice, but that's fine. It's the same concept. The difficulty is that sometimes things do get messed up. These are humans we're dealing with. Sometimes prosecutors might mess up, a judge might mess up. And to say that someone who has been abusing their child gets to walk free because we're one day late on a 90-day time limit is unconscionable. As the good chairman of the judiciary just said, essentially the prosecutor now has to wait until that child has been abused again to bring the charges. We don't do this in any other types of crimes where we put this with prejudice aspect on. We don't do this with misdemeanors. Why would we do it on the far extreme as to the abuse of children? Clearly, I think the district court judges were asking for too much. I think we found a good compromise. I think this amendment swings the pendulum way too far in the other direction. So I would urge you to vote no.
Representative Hallinan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Several of the presentations or items of discussion have indicated that almost that these people are already guilty before being proven guilty. On and for the amendment. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Further discussion prior to the sponsor of the amendment. Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. There was little discussion about shelter care hearings and how if the kids are not in their own home, that it's a different process. Well, I beg to differ because those hearings are included in what we are trying to address throughout this bill. A shelter care hearing is done, I believe, within 72 hours of a child being taken out of their home. It may be 48. I apologize for not having that number exactly in my head. But those are extremely deferential to the safety of a child if you've just had people going into a home and looking at a situation that has come up. We also heard some discussion about the federal law and whether or not we were mandated to have the 60 and 90 days. The good chairman of judiciary brought that up and that was part of what our law was, why we changed this. Those time frames were too short. And while that's not federal law, it's not mandated by federal law, it is recommended by federal law that you have those kind of time frames and deadlines in your juvenile statutes when it comes to these kinds of hearings. We have extended that, again, on both sides, on the front end and on the back end. Now, if a child is being molested on their way to Colorado, Nebraska, I don't care where it is, I have absolutely no problem filing criminal charges against the person who would have perpetrated that against a child. Criminal charges are different than anything we're talking about here, folks. So if you've got somebody who's truly out there beating up their children, molesting children, doing stuff like that, that's not necessarily what we're talking about here. Criminal charges are different than the charges we're talking about in this particular amendment. I would also like to inform the body that recently there was a Supreme Court decision here in Wyoming that talked about these deadlines. And it talked about how the legislature, because it had not given very specific instructions about what these timelines mean, that a prosecutor can go ahead and dismiss and refile. This is our opportunity, guys, to really make a statement that kids matter. We've got to get these things in there, and if it's not important enough to get it in there, get out of these families' lives and let them go on about their business and make these timelines something that are concrete and matter. And I would appreciate your aye vote. Thank you.
The motion is to adopt third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 97. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye.
Aye.
All of those opposed to the motion signify by saying no.
No.
Third reading amendment number 1 to House Bill 97 has failed. House Bill 97 having been read 3 separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass the House? The Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden.
No.
Anderson.
Aye.
Bagby.
Aye.
Berger. Blake.
Aye.
Brechtel.
No.
Brown.
Aye.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Kraft.
Aye.
Davison.
No.
Dirks.
No.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Edmonds.
No.
Edwards.
No.
Esquivel F.
Aye.
Esquivel K.
Aye.
Gilmore.
Aye.
Gingery.
Aye.
Goggles.
Aye.
Hales.
No.
Hallinan. Hammonds.
Aye.
Harshman.
Aye.
Harvey.
Aye.
Eichel excused. Illaway.
Aye.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jones.
Aye.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon.
Aye.
Lockhart.
Aye.
Lubnow.
Aye.
Madden. Madden.
Aye.
Martin.
Aye.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
No.
Meyer.
Aye.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
Aye.
Olson.
No.
Peterson.
Aye.
Philp.
Aye.
Korberg.
Aye.
Samuelson.
Aye.
Simlick.
No.
Shepperson.
No.
Simpson.
Aye.
Slater.
Aye.
Stewart.
Aye.
Stubson.
Aye.
Teeters.
Aye.
Thompson.
Aye.
Throne.
Aye.
Wallace.
No.
Warren.
Aye.
White.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dan.
Aye.
Zwanitzer Dave.
No.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Edwards? No to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 47 ayes, 12 noes, 1 excused.
House Bill 97, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House of Representatives, House Bill 97 has passed the House. Members of the House, a special announcement. Since being elected to the United States Senate in 1997, Senator Michael Lindsey has cast votes and worked on some of the most pivotal and historic issues of our times. At the start of the 109th Senate in 2005, Senator Enzi became the only the ninth Wyoming senator to ascend to the rank of chairman on one of the House Senate Committee, standing Senate committees. He is currently serving on the committees of Banking, Housing, and Urban Affairs, the Budget Committee, Committee of Health, Education, Labor, and Pensions, and the Committee on Small Business and Entrepreneurship. Senator Enzi grew up in Thermopolis and Sheridan and has a long record of public service to the people of Wyoming. He was elected as mayor of Gillette and then went on to serve in the Wyoming House of Representatives from 1987 to 1990 and in the Wyoming Senate from 1991 to 96. It is my distinct pleasure and honor to welcome home United States Senator Michael Enzi.
Thank you. Thank you very much. It's good to be back.
Mr. Speaker, fellow legislators, I really appreciate this opportunity to see you in action. And I watched that vote. I don't know if you've ever watched us vote. I hope you haven't spent the time watching us vote. We have what they call 15-minute votes, and nobody shows up until at least 15 minutes. And they have a little grace period at the end, so a vote usually takes us 30 minutes. Now, part of that's because we have to walk from, we aren't over there listening like you are. We don't pay attention to the debate that way. So when they actually call a vote, they can't call it until there's unanimous consent. If any one person objects, the vote has to be delayed. And that might be because they're downtown giving a speech or something like that. So our votes are very erratic. Two or three a day is a big deal. Of course, we work on a bill for about 3 weeks. We just kind of have one reading. Technically, it's three readings, but we have one reading. And when that vote happens, they let us know when the halfway mark is. And we stack votes. So when we get permission to do them, we usually do several at a time. I love that time because, having worked here, I know that you can get up and move around, talk to people, lobby your bills a little bit. The only chance I get to do that in Washington is when we have stacked votes. We do two or three votes in a row. That means we may be there for an hour and a half together. So you'll always see me carrying a briefcase. That's got my list of people and issues that I need to talk to while they're isolated there. And it's a very helpful time for me. But if we do more than three votes, people get too distracted and you can't do any lobbying anymore. So I only like three votes in a row. When we do the stacked votes, our second vote is just a 10-minute vote. That only takes 20 minutes. So I love the efficiency that you have here. You don't wait for unanimous consent. When the debate's kind of over, you vote. And that's really how it ought to be. And you're at your desks paying attention. Now, the best training that I ever got for Washington, though, was serving in the House and in the Senate. You kind of learn the process, and you can adjust it to the process they're doing there. Of course, you're always lamenting how it ought to be based on how a really efficient group does it. And if a person serves in the legislature, any legislature in any state, and comes to the United States Senate or the House, it usually saves them 2 to 4 years of figuring out how to do things. They're able to jump in and actually start some legislation and follow it through and get it finished. And that's been the case with John. John got his training in the Wyoming legislature. And he's a hard worker and a fast learner, and he's able to make that transition from how the process works here to how it is there. I think he probably talked to you about some of the differences that anybody that's ever served in the Wyoming legislature would like to see him do back there so that we can be more efficient. About 2 months ago, time does fly, I got to go to the White House for another bill signing. It was on the Head Start bill. And that was out of authorization. Oh, thank you. that was out of authorization for about 6 years. Even though there are sunsets and deadlines, we aren't able to quite meet them like you are. But we got that reauthorized, and I got to go to the White House for the signing on it. And the president noted at that time that our committee is the only committee sending him any bills. And I got to tell you why. Again, this is something I didn't exactly realize what we were doing here, but I learned it here, and that's what I call my 80% rule in Washington. You know, when I was chairman of the committee, my ranking member was Ted Kennedy, and we got a lot of bills done. In fact, we got the average committee back there gets 3 bills every 2 years because how long it takes us to debate a bill. We got 27 bills signed by the president. And so a reporter came to me and said, so how is it that the fourth most conservative person in the United States Senate is able to work with the third most liberal person in the United States Senate? And I said, well, it's because we're reasonable. But I got to thinking about it more after that. Incidentally, I shared that story with Senator Kennedy, and he said, so who's ahead of me? But I established this 80% rule when I was the chairman, and I've discovered that everybody can agree on 80% of everything. Now, if you leave out that 20%, life's pretty good. And this isn't just in legislation. Think about it in your personal life when you're interacting with your family.
You know, there's probably about 20% of the stuff you just don't bring up, unless you're expecting a bad day, unless you want things to be a little hot. You concentrate on that 80%, everybody's pretty happy. Now, within the 80%, you can pull out any one of those issues, and you can probably agree on 80% of that issue. And if you concentrate on that 80%, it works. If you concentrate on the 20%, it looks like the U.S. Senate debating. But it isn't what you compromise on. Compromise doesn't work real well with the polarization and the rift that we've got back there. The way that we compromise, I know you're doing budget now, and I love the process you do and the efficiency with which you do it. And we mentioned that back there. You know, how come it takes us 2 years to do a year's worth of work? You know, we always go into the next year, even though we have a one-year budget cycle, not a two-year budget cycle. But we run over all the time in trying to do that, so we just don't have that efficiency. But we compromise on the budget. The Senate will do something for $10 million, the House will do something for $100 million, and we compromise at $150 million. Yeah, that's... So compromise doesn't work real well back there. It's what you leave out. You can leave some things out of a bill and still have a great bill. And you can take that other 20% and you could try and find 80% of a solution on that. It usually means finding a third way to do it. Because if it's been brought up before, there's already an opinion here and opinion here that everybody's going to stick by and vote on without ever looking at a single detail. But if you find that third way, they'll take a look at it and say, I think that fits. Senator Kennedy and I get together and we write the principles on any bill. Then we go and we meet with the stakeholders. That's anybody who's interested in it. Around here, you'd call it a hearing. We do hearings differently back there. The chairman gets to pick everybody but one person on a panel. The ranking member picks the other person. Both sides show up to beat up on the witnesses. Give great statements, ask great questions. But it doesn't really get the information that you get by doing a hearing and actually listening to the people. Senator Kennedy and I have changed to a roundtable, which is where we invite in 20 experts that we both agree on, and they tell us how it works. And that's modeled after the Wyoming legislature. So I just thank you for the way that you work. As I go around the state, I always talk about the efficiency of the Wyoming legislature and how during a presidential election year, where they ought to be concentrating is on the local elections. That includes city councils, school boards, hospital boards, but definitely the legislature. Because what you do in any given year affects them more than what we do in 2 or 3 years, or maybe 6. That's how long it takes us to pass a bill, usually, from new idea to finish. And you guys can do it in a year. So keep up the good work. I'm so proud of you. We'll keep using you as an example of how it ought to be done. And you do put the detail in. You sit at your desk. You concentrate. You bring the diversity of the state together better than any poll can do it, because you talk to people. That's more than the polls usually get. And that gives you an idea by talking to the person that's actually doing the job. And they usually have the best solutions. And one of the joys of working in Wyoming is we don't have a bunch of complainers. Now, we have people that want things done, but I've found that almost anybody that wants something done knows what they think needs to be done. And since they're the one really working the problem, it's usually a pretty good common sense idea. Of course, another problem in Washington is common sense doesn't go very far. But I just want you to know I appreciate all of the work that you do. And I know that Wyoming folks do, as they think about it, that you really do make a difference in their lives. Keep up the good work. And thanks for letting me visit.
Representative Bagby.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. May I have privilege of the floor?
Yes, you may.
Ladies and gentlemen, I would like to introduce to you Cindy Baldwin, sitting up here in this balcony. Would you please stand, Cindy? She's our Carbon County Treasurer, and we're very, very proud of her. And she got out of the Antarctica and Rawlins to come over here in the sunshine. Thank you.
We return to that order of business of bills on third reading and final passage. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 109.
House Bill 109, introduced by Representative Illaway, an act relating to telecommunications. Be it enacted by the legislature of the state of Wyoming.
House Bill 109, having been read three separate times, the question is, shall the bill pass the House? Chief Clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Alden. Anderson, Bagby, Berger, Blake, Brechtel, Brown, Buchanan, Childers, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Dockstetter, Edmonds, Edwards, Esquivel F, Esquivel K, Gilmore, Gingery,
no.
Goggles,
aye.
Hales,
aye.
Hallinan,
no.
Hammonds,
aye.
Harshman,
no.
Harvey,
aye.
Eichel excused, Illaway,
aye.
Yagi,
aye.
Jones,
aye.
Jorgensen,
aye.
Landon,
aye.
Lockhart,
aye.
Lubnow,
aye.
Madden,
aye.
Martin,
aye.
McComey,
aye.
Mercer,
aye.
Meyer,
aye.
Miller, Millen,
aye.
Olson,
no.
Peterson,
aye.
Philp,
no.
Korberg,
aye.
Samuelson,
aye.
Simlick,
no.
Shepperson,
aye.
Simpson,
aye.
Slater,
aye.
Stewart,
aye.
Stubson,
aye.
Teeters,
no.
Thompson,
aye.
Throne,
aye.
Wallace,
aye.
Warren,
aye.
White,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan, Zwanitzer Dave,
aye.
Mr. Speaker.
Aye.
Childers.
Aye.
Esquivel F.
Aye.
I'm about to close the vote. Are there any changes? Brechtel. Aye to no. Davison. Aye to no. Hallinan. No to aye. Are there any other changes? The vote is closed. 48 ayes, 11 noes, 1 excused.
House Bill 109, having received the affirmative vote of the majority of the members elected to the House of Representatives, House Bill 109 has passed the House. Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Mr. Speaker, I move that the House resolve itself into committee of the whole, and folks, the first bill up, 128, will be laid back a little ways. There's an amendment that isn't quite ready yet. Thank you, Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Majority Floor Leader. Members of the House, remember today at 5 p.m. is the deadline for third reading amendments to be put into the LSO office for drafting, and tomorrow is the last day for committee of the whole in the House of Origin. And for those of you that don't remember, third reading on the budget will be tomorrow. That is pursuant to House Rule 14-3, notwithstanding Senate Rule 13-1 and House Rule 12-1. Third reading of a mirror budget bill in the first House shall be conducted on the second legislative working day following the day second reading is completed. You have heard the motion. All of those in favor of the motion signify by saying aye. All those opposed to the motion signify by saying no. Representative Stubson.
The Committee of the Whole will please come to order. The first bill for our
Mr. Chairman, I'm sorry.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Please move 128 right below HJ6, so we'll do HJ6 first, please.
The first bill for our consideration is House Joint Resolution 6. The reading clerk will please read the bill.
House Joint Resolution Number 6, introduced by Representative Illaway, a joint resolution requesting Congress to amend the Satellite Home Viewers Improvement Act. This joint resolution is referred to Committee Number 4, Education, which respectfully returned it to the House with the recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Kraft, Davison, Dirks, Goggles, Yagi, McComey, Teeters, Wallace, White. Signed, Representative McComey, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with the recommendation that House Bill, or House Joint Resolution, 6, do pass. And with that introduction, I will turn it over to the good gentleman from where you're sitting to explain the bill.
Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. House Joint Resolution 6 is known as Statewide Satellite Carriage of Wyoming PBS. Wyoming PBS provides the citizens of Wyoming a vital source of non-commercial educational and public affairs programming and services with content that is consistently of the highest quality. Wyoming PBS is a local institution that provides content and services tailored to meet Wyoming community needs. It offers the citizens of Wyoming in-depth, locally produced programs that connect Wyoming people with information through programs on Wyoming's public affairs, the legislature, history, arts, culture, and so forth. This joint resolution refers to the Satellite Home Viewer Improvement Act, which was passed by Congress in 1999. It was intended to require satellite providers to provide local service to their customers. But to the contrary, it distorted the interpretation of local service and has resulted in declining access by Wyoming people to Wyoming PBS. The Act designates that local service by satellite will be determined by Nielsen-designated market areas, and this prohibits satellite providers, two of them, from providing Wyoming PBS to many counties in Wyoming. Now, I'm sure that my learned friend from Western Wyoming will say, well, now it's a satellite that sits up there. Why doesn't everybody get it anyway? And I asked that question, and the answer to that is it's done by coding. So the two satellite providers can code where you are and whether you can get that particular program or not. This joint resolution will go to our congressional folks in Washington, D.C., and hopefully they will be able to amend the Satellite Home Viewer Act written by Congress in 1999 and allow those folks in Wyoming to get Wyoming PBS. As I indicated, it's just kind of a bifurcated system. Cheyenne gets Scotts Bluff commercial stations, Laramie gets Denver, Rock Springs gets Salt Lake, Cody gets Billings, and so forth. So this is something that's important, whereas five of our 23 counties, Fremont, Natrona, Hot Springs, Washakie, and Converse, the center part of the state, can get satellite, can get Wyoming PBS by satellite, the other 18 counties cannot. I ask for your support of this resolution.
Is there any other discussion, or are we ready for the question? Question being called.
Mr. Chairman.
Representative Bagby.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would urge you to pass this resolution. Wyoming PBS is about the only programming that's worth watching about 99.5% of the time. My grandkids love it. I love it, and I urge your support. Thank you.
Question being called. All those in favor of House Joint Representative McComey's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with recommendation that House Joint Resolution 6 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Okay. House Joint Resolution 6 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 128. Would the reading clerk please read the bill?
House Bill 128, introduced by Representative Mercer, an act relating to the Central Registry of Child Protection Cases.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure, Chairman Buchanan?
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 128 do pass, and further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 128. Ladies and gentlemen, on page 2, line 24, in that subsection C, basically we added the words, after advice, we added the words, on the right to counsel. And that little section was talking about ways in which a report of abuse or neglect could be substantiated. And under C, as you can see there, if we were to tell somebody that they could admit to the allegation, we also wanted them to know the consequences of that admission. And you can see there are possible consequences of the admission. That's on the bottom of page 2. Continuing on the top of page 3, is that they would also be listed on the Central Registry. And we also thought it'd be a good idea to advise them that they have the right to counsel before they make a decision on that. And that's all the Standing Committee Amendment does. And I would stand for questions. And if not, I would call for the question.
Question.
Representative Mercer.
It's a friendly amendment. Thank you.
You have heard the motion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. Question having been called, all those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 has passed. Chairman Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would defer to the good representative from House District 53, who in addition to the member from House District 23 has Class D airspace for an explanation of the bill.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure what that exactly meant, but that's great. I bring to you House Bill 128, and first of all, would move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 128. As we were going through and trying to figure out amendments and how this thing worked and making sure that we had everything done correctly, a certain body within this building, kind of down in the basement, was taking a look at it and found a glitch in it. And so this amendment is to fix that glitch a little bit. One of the things that that this fixes is if you look on page 3, under statute 14.3.204, we have some language in there that talks about substantiation and investigation and how that would work. With the new definitions for substantiation that have been provided on page 2, I don't know exactly how to describe these subparagraphs A, B, and C. They're from lines 13 through 24, and then on page 3, lines 1 through 2. By changing that definition, subsection A of 14.3.204 didn't fit anymore. It didn't make sense, and so we needed to fix that. And that's what this amendment does. The first thing this amendment does is it goes in on line 15 of page 2. And it creates a final decision through the Office of Administrative Hearings. If a case is appealed to them or brought to them related to substantiation. If you'll recall, when I introduced this bill, one of the problems that I felt existed within our central registry statutes was that the Office of Administrative Hearings really didn't have a final say. All they could do was make a recommendation to the director, and then the director would make the final determination. This puts that final determination right into those definitions. On page 3, line 8, we go in and start changing how that piece works. And the intent of this change is to basically, again, allow for a person to either admit that they have done some abuse and neglect to a child, or that they are allowed to have a hearing and that that hearing will have meaning. So this is more information to the participants of these hearings, and it also offers some finality. And I would ask the body to approve that amendment. Thank you.
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I just have one question on that. On page 3, line 12, it talks about the Office of Administrative Hearings. It's my understanding, and correct me if things have changed, that they have a huge backlog. So what would they be more able to deal with this caseload than the courts? It just seems to me like it's going to drag the process out longer.
Representative Mercer. Representative Goggles.
Mr. Chair, I have a couple of questions. The deletion on page 3, line 23, under investigation. The group homes in my area have asked for clarification regarding that under investigation. They informed me they cannot accurately screen potential employees. And then the second question is, does this bill represent a fundamental shift from protecting the safety of children to protecting the rights of adults?
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. The good representative from House District 33. has asked questions that are related more to the bill than to the amendment, and so I would be happy to answer those questions as I present the bill, but for right now I would like to stick with the amendment if possible. And in response to the good representative who sits back here by this microphone, the question about whether or not the Office of Administrative Hearings is backlogged, I think every court in this state has a backlog. I think that they have to prioritize their cases, and I think that they try very hard to make sure that they do that. Right now, this is the system we have. As we go in and we use the Office of Administrative Hearings to determine these cases. They hear these cases right now the way it is. I didn't change that. I'm simply giving them the authority to make a decision rather than the opportunity to give a recommendation, and that's what this is about.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, the Judiciary Committee worked very hard on the rewrite of Title 14 a number of years ago, and as I recall, on the central registry provisions of this statute, we spent hours hearing testimony about how it worked, why it worked the way it did, and these very issues that we're talking about today. And when you look at the purpose of Title 14 in the purpose clause of 14.3201, it is fairly clear that the purpose of Title 14 is to delineate the responsibilities of the state agency, other governmental agencies or officials, professionals, and citizens to intervene on behalf of a child suspected of being abused or neglected, to protect the best interests of the child, to further offer protective services when necessary in order to prevent any harm to the child or any other children living in the home, to protect children from abuse or neglect which jeopardizes their health or welfare, to stabilize the home environment, to preserve family life whenever possible, and to provide permanency for the child in appropriate circumstances. It ends with this sentence: the child's health, safety, and welfare shall be of paramount concern in implementing and enforcing this article. Now, the question about central registry and whether someone should be listed as under investigation is the crux of this bill. Are we trying to protect the child and other children who may be come in contact with this person who someone has said to the department, this person has committed abuse or neglect? Okay. When that report is made, an investigation takes place, and the director or the agency head in that community makes a determination of whether, beyond a preponderance of the evidence, which is more likely than not, that it has occurred, they will substantiate the case. That's the finding. Once it's substantiated, the person has the right to appeal that and go through the administrative hearing. I've done those. I've won them. I've lost them. But that's the hearing. But in the meantime, they're listed in the central registry as under investigation. And as the good representative from Fremont County indicated, there are real concerns by child service agencies that they will not be able to tell under the terms of this bill that someone is under investigation. So you have to weigh due process rights of an adult versus the safety of the child, which is what Title 14 is intended to protect. Now, I think what the bill does is shift, rather than the substantiation being the first step that lists the person, they couldn't be listed until the substantiation were proven after a hearing. That's a substantial shift in the process. And I'm not sure that's the shift we need to protect children. I am very sensitive to the due process rights of adults who are accused of these things, but you have to qualify to be able to ask the question of, are you on the central registry too? There, not everyone can simply access any of that information. And, you know, this was a difficult issue for the Judiciary Committee to deal with and this body when we updated Title 14. But what it came down to then, and what I think it comes down to today, is does the interest of protecting the child outweigh, in these child abuse and neglect cases, the due process rights of the abuser or the alleged abuser? And certainly they're not always right. But what I see in this, someone could be accused, and if they're accused, they immediately ask for a hearing. Or it says they could even go to court to ask for a hearing. It may not be unusual in circumstances in our state where that hearing might not take place for 6 months. And how many more children will that person have contact with? I know that there are instances where people report each other for fraudulent reasons. And if that's the case, and if I were a subject of a substantiated claim, I'd immediately ask for a hearing and get that thing done and try and prove that, no, I didn't do anything. This is, you know, I'm a victim of a fraudulent misrepresentation here. But so those are the things I want you to be aware of when you weigh what this bill is about. It's shifting the burden now to the state to have to prove at an earlier stage that this person really did what they said was done before they can be listed anywhere on the registry, and does that best protect the interests of the children. Thank you.
We are still on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1, Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to caution not only against the amendment, but against the whole bill. As we've heard, what we're doing is we're shifting from rights of children to rights of adults. Obviously, we have to take into consideration both of them. But I would suggest to you that what the amendment is doing is removing the decision to substantiate from DFS and putting it under the Office of Administrative Hearings. Is that exactly what we want to do? The other problem is when we remove the designation of under investigation from the registry, then if indeed I'm working at a child protection agency somewhere that is employing people to work with either children or problem adults, I have to do a background check. I have to check and see if the individual is under investigation or if the person is on the central registry. If the person is indeed under investigation but it's not listed, I hire that person, then it's substantiated. I now have someone who has a substantiated charge of either child abuse or neglect working for me and potentially putting children or sensitive adults at further risk. I think this is an area we really need to look at very, very carefully, at the potential of increasing the risk factor. I would also like to suggest to you that the Management Audit Committee right now is currently auditing Child Protective Services, because we're certainly not saying that the registry is not without flaw. We're certainly not saying that we don't need to maybe make some changes. But right now, the Audit Committee is auditing Child Protective Services. I am wondering if possibly our best course of action might be to defeat the amendment, to defeat the bill, and allow the audit that is currently going on to include the registry and take action based on the recommendations of the Management Audit Committee. Thank you.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. On and against the amendment and on and against the bill, in particular on the amendment, I'm concerned with the provision that the Office of Administrative Hearings will be the final agency decision maker. It takes it away from DFS, who has the expertise in making the final decision as to who should be going on, and places into a office that does not have that expertise. So I'm concerned about the amendment, but more importantly, I'm concerned about the entire bill. The good bringer of the bill actually was strong in convincing me that the change needs to occur to the central registry, and I agree with her that some change needs to agree. And actually, at least the tone of DFS when they testified in committee was that they agreed that there are some issues with the list. I agree with the last speaker that perhaps we should wait for this audit to be completed. Perhaps then that will assist us in coming up with some answers how to do this list. I commend the bringer of the bill. I think she's pointed out a very good issue. I think it's an issue that needs to be looked at. But I brought a lengthy amendment in committee that actually ended up probably being longer than the bill that didn't make it. And that's when it dawned on me that it was just too much to try to get this bill to the point that I think is workable. So I would urge you to vote no on the amendment and no on the bill.
Chairman McComey.
Well, thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, on the amendment, sometimes if it stays with the Department of Family Services, they're making decisions based upon their own process. And the administrative procedure, as I understand this is trying to bring in an outside organization that would have no bias to review both sides of the issue. So I'd like a little more clarification on just what the intent was here.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I believe that the representative from House District 54 has correctly stated at least one position for this bill. However, I would still like to get the amendment voted on so that we can move forward, because much of what we've been discussing in the last few minutes really doesn't have a lot to do with the amendment. So if we could do that vote and then try to move forward, I think that I could then explain the bill much more thoroughly based on how that amendment either passes or fails.
Right. We are on the amendment, Committee of the Whole Amendment number one. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number one, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed?
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment number one has failed. Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have to rearrange just a little because of the failure of the amendment. Pardon me. When I introduced this bill, I talked about liberties and rights and the due process that we expect when we have our liberties or rights affected by a governmental decision or a governmental agency. I talked about how employment, schooling, housing, etc., all can be affected by your name being placed on the central registry. So this is not just a very select few people. This is your potential landlord. This is your potential employer. This is your potential school. This is your, a lot of folks who can actually get their hands on this kind of information. And it does affect your rights. Now, I had given a handout on that, on some due process issues. Now, unfortunately, this bill is kind of languished in the stack a little bit, so I hope you can still find that. It has my name at the top, House District 53, and then I have on there House Bill 128. On this handout, I talk a little bit about due process rights, and it's not a comprehensive overview of it, but it's at least something to get you thinking about what due process really is. We talk about civil actions. And in a civil action where you might lose some property, you have the right to notice. You have an opportunity to be heard by an impartial hearing or reviewing agency. You have the opportunity to discuss every material fact. And you don't have presumptions against you. This is when you might lose a piece of property, guys. In a criminal action where you are potentially losing your liberty, you have a whole lot more rights. We all know and we've all heard about criminals and the kinds of rights to due process that criminals have. They have a right to a fair trial. They have a right to timely notice. They have a right to that hearing to be fast and meaningful. In a juvenile action, the things that you might be losing is the fundamental right to associate with your family. And that's not just a parent's fundamental right to associate with their children. That's a child's fundamental right to associate with their parents. And I think a lot of times we forget that in our zeal to protect children. I absolutely want children protected. I absolutely want to see us do the very best we can for kids. But I cannot see us doing that properly if we are stomping on someone else's rights in the process. I've received some information from a few different places. I've received an email. I've received a note that I think everyone else received on their desk that expressed the concern related to the registry not including those who are under investigation. Think about this. Think about how this works. Somebody calls in. They say, gee, I think so-and-so has abused their child, has neglected their child. Based on that allegation, the Department of Family Services then decides whether you're going to be on an assessment track or on an investigation track. And if you're on the investigation track, you are on that registry as being under investigation. Those investigations, according to testimony in our committee, can take up to 6 months or longer, depending on how long they think they need to take. There are provisions in our statutes that say 6 months. However, sometimes it just doesn't get done that fast. So you can sit on there for quite a while. Now, the registry does require that there be some kind of a change in that that entry within that 6 months. So based on an allegation, you go on that central registry, and now you've got an employer out there who's saying, a potential employer who wants to look at the central registry, or a potential landlord that wants to look at that registry to see if you're on there. They want to do some kind of a background check and make sure you're not a pedophile moving into an apartment complex that has 900 kids or something. I mean, I think that's a responsible thing to do. If you are an employer with a policy that says we're going to check this stuff out, then you ask. You have it on your employment application and you ask. Before anybody can even look at the information on the registry, you have to sign a waiver that says, yeah, this guy can look on the registry. So we aren't changing that in the draconian way that it seems like so many of the people who are against this bill would like you to believe. All you got to do is ask as a potential employer, as a potential landlord, as a potential educator. And one of the things I'd also like you to think about when we look at that question is on the central registry, we not only have people who are really bad actors, because we do, we've got the mom with the dirty house that was substantiated for neglect. We have a very wide gamut of people who exist on this registry as it sits right now. And that is why we need somebody out there to give us an external review of these processes. We've got to have somebody out there who sets a standard, and that standard is preponderance of the evidence. We heard some discussion about how we need to let the experts make these decisions, the experts in the Family Services Agency of the state. Unfortunately, that's not working real well. And in discussions, they don't believe, in many of these cases, that they should be held to that same standard. They think they should only have their internal people making these decisions, or that they should have a specially trained judge to make these decisions, because preponderance of the evidence is a legal standard, and they want some flexibility in there. Preponderance of the evidence means you just made it over that hump of, yeah, I think that happened. It's that 51% thing that we'd heard about on a bill previously. And while that's really not easily defined, that's one of the ways that we've heard it described for that level of evidence. It was also stated that the crux of this bill is that we remove the under-investigation piece. That is not the crux of the intent of this bill. The crux of the intent of this bill is to provide due process. The crux of the intent of this bill is to make sure that we have an external agency taking a look at these decisions, making sure that they meet the burden of proof that we have set out in our statutes, and that people are being protected across the board, the kids, the moms, the dads, the employers, the educators, the landlords, and the people who live in this state. In discussions with the hearing agency that currently hears these, I have learned that 5 of the last 8 times that hearing agency has recommended that a case not be substantiated, it was ignored. This is a problem. We've got to have a standard. We've got to have somebody taking a look at it. The change in definition for substantiate, it provides us a foundation for entry onto this registry. We need that foundation. We need to be protecting everybody's rights to a reasonable degree. I understand we're looking out for kids, but we've got to be protecting everyone's rights to a reasonable degree. This bill offers an outside review. And a meaningful review. With that, I'm sure I'm going to have more questions, because I think a whole bunch of them were asked on the amendment that I may have missed, if I could defer.
Representative Warren.
Mr. Chairman, I had a question from the sponsor of the bill, and that was, there seemed to be some indication that there are a lot of problems. My question is there data to indicate that there have been a lot of problems in the state with people being affected by this? And what was the genesis for bringing this forward before we actually review the registry process as is going to be done?
Representative Jorgensen.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. My question for the sponsor is, is based on my confusion. I've heard two very good and opposing convincing arguments from qualified attorneys. And being a layperson, I just need to clarify a little bit. I believe I heard the good representative from District 53 indicate that as an employer of a child protection agency, as the employer, all you have to do is ask whether a potential employee is on the list by virtue of under investigation, and I'm not clear on that. I guess that, for me, that's what I would like to get cleared up. And the reason I seem to think it's appropriate is in the reason and acts relating to on page one, which is really the only part of the thing I understand. It says eliminating those cases from the central registry. So I guess I can't reconcile those two understandings of mine. Thank you, Mr. Chair.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'd like to answer the first questions from the good lady from the Laramie area. There are lots of problems. We are seeing problems. We're seeing substantiation used in ways that it really should not be. The genesis of this bill came from a constituent of mine that understands the ramifications of this registry very well. His daughter was being placed on it. And through investigation on his part, a lot of time, having to get a lawyer, et cetera, they learned that really no investigation had occurred before she was going to be placed on this registry. The people in the office that she was dealing with basically told her, gee, don't worry about it. It's not that big a deal. It's not going to affect your rights that much. And that is their perspective. It does affect your rights, and it affects your ability to do so many things. So that is the genesis. We had somebody who was extremely upset with the way that this process was being used against a family member. Ultimately, it was unsubstantiated, and that person is not on that registry. To answer the good gentleman's questions, when I say an employer can ask, basically what I'm saying is, on your employment application, most people have something about, gee, do you, especially in a child or sensitive field, you're going to have something on there about, have you ever committed any crimes? Have you done this? Have you done that? Right now, a lot of those places are going to have a form that you sign that says, you can check the central registry and check my name for it. If we change this, that doesn't change. The only thing that changes is whether or not you receive the information about who may or may not be under investigation. That's what we're looking at here. So hopefully that is an answer to that question. A person has to agree to let you look at the registry before you ever get to look at it. So,
Representative Kraft.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. I would like to just clarify an additional point about the central registry. Only employers who hire people to work with children have access to the central registry. Landlords do not. If I'm not part of a business that hires people to work with children, I don't have access. I would just like to clarify that, and I would like to ask you once again to let the Management Audit Committee do their work and defeat this bill. Thank you.
Representative Mercer.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman, for my last time. The person whose daughter was going on that registry is a landlord. He called down to find out what was on that registry, and he got a copy, and he said that it's not a problem for him. So, legal or not, he's getting it. I can't answer whether it's legal. When it comes to the Management Audit Committee, I have a copy of the last report from 1999 and everything that they looked at in this particular audit. The central registry is not a part of what that was looked at. I certainly hope it is this time, but we need some fixes now, and we can go in and we can see how those fixes are working and make some changes if necessary. I don't think it'll be necessary, but if necessary, next year. Thank you.
Is there any other discussion on the bill? Question being called. All those in favor of Representative Buchanan's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, they do so with a recommendation that Bill number 128 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no.
No.
Sounds as if the noes have it. Pursuant to House Rule 10-5B, the bill having failed a voice vote, a standing division vote is required. All those in favor, please stand. And those opposed, please stand. Having failed a standing division vote, a roll call vote is required, and the chief clerk will call the roll.
Alden. Alden.
Aye.
Anderson.
No.
Bagby.
Aye.
Berger.
No.
Blake.
No.
Brechtel.
Aye.
Brown.
No.
Buchanan.
Aye.
Childers.
No.
Kraft.
No.
Davison.
No.
Dirks. Dockstetter.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Dockstetter.
Aye.
Edmonds.
Aye.
Edwards.
Aye.
Esquivel F.
No.
Esquivel K.
No.
Gilmore.
No.
Gingery.
No.
Goggles.
No.
Hales.
No.
Hallinan.
Aye.
Hammonds.
No.
Harshman.
No.
Harvey. Eichel, excused. Illaway.
No.
Yagi.
Aye.
Jones.
No.
Jorgensen.
Aye.
Landon.
No.
Lockhart.
No.
Lubnow.
No.
Madden.
Aye.
Martin.
No.
McComey.
Aye.
Mercer.
Aye.
Meyer.
No.
Miller.
Aye.
Millen.
No.
Olson.
Aye.
Peterson.
No.
Philp.
No.
Korberg.
No.
Samuelson.
Simlick, aye.
Shepperson,
aye.
Simpson,
no.
Slater,
no.
Stewart,
no.
Stubson,
no.
Teeters,
aye.
Thompson,
no.
Throne,
no.
Wallace,
aye.
Warren,
no.
White,
aye.
Zwanitzer Dan,
no.
Zwanitzer Dave,
no.
Mr. Speaker,
no.
I am about to close the vote. Are there any changes? The vote is closed. 19 ayes, 40 noes, 1 excused.
By your vote, House Bill number 128 has failed the House. Representative Esquivel.
Privilege to the floor, Mr. Chair.
Proceed.
Thank you, Mr. Chair. Mr. Chair, members of the House, it's my privilege today to welcome the students and staff of the Wyoming TRIO and GEAR UP programs. They're here today to bring awareness of educational access issues. Some of you, these goodie bags that you found on your desk, was provided by that group. TRIO and GEAR UP are federally funded projects that provide assistance and support to low-income and first-generation students from junior high to college to aspire and to gain admission to and succeed in higher education. Students and staff are here today representing the following projects: Student Support Services, Upward Bound Math Science Initiative, Veterans, Upward Bound, McNair, Educational Opportunity Center, Educational Talent Search, GEAR UP, and the students and the staff are over here behind you. I forget what direction that is, but that direction. Would you stand up and join me in welcoming the students and staff from TRIO and GEAR UP programs.
Welcome to the House. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill number 52. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 52, introduced by Development Disabilities, an act relating to Medicaid regarding developmental programs, cost-based reimbursements. This bill was referred to Committee Number 10, Labor, Health, and Social Services, which returned it with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Esquivel, Kay, Hales, Hallinan, Harvey, Eichel, Landon, Lubnow, Millen, Stewart. Signed, Representative Landon, Chairman. The bill was further referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned it with a recommendation that it do pass. Ayes, Berger, Harshman, Jones, Jorgensen, Peterson, Philp, Warren. Signed, Representative Philp, Chairman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. What is your pleasure? Chairman Landon.
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 52 do pass. Further, Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1 to House Bill 52. And, Mr. Chairman, I would like to yield both of those motions for an explanation to the good representative who is chairman of the Select Committee on Developmental Programs.
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, the other day we took a car trip, one on a slow country road and the other one on a freeway, when we watched two bills parallel down the track last year. This year I'd like you to get on a bus and let's go to a tour of Yellowstone Park. But let's say that we only get as far as Casper the first year, and as far as Shoshone the second year, and as far as Cody the third year, we can't stop this tour bus at Wapiti. We need to go on into and get on with the business, and that's what this bill is about, getting on with the business. For 4 years, we have looked at this issue. This bill is a culmination of the work that began with the legislative management audit, and this is the last matter to be completed. This bill brings a cost-based reimbursement system to the waiver services to adults and children with developmental disabilities, as well as persons with acquired brain injuries. What CMS jumped into this process, probably about Casper, it could have been Shoshone, and said that they, too, insisted that states come to move to this kind of a cost basis to determine their waiver rates. Now, when we deal with the waiver programs, we're dealing with individuals. And so it all begins with the individual's budgeted amount. What are their needs? What do they require for health and safety? What do they require for day programs? And that's where this cost study started. What we did was we took the adults, the recipients of these waivers, and we said, what does it cost to serve them individually? What is the kind of supervision do they need? Could one supervisor deal with four clients, three clients? Or does this person need a one-on-one supervision situation? And those would be people that are really severely disabled or have a dual diagnosis of developmental disability plus mental illness. And they are out there. So we said, what does it cost? How are we going to figure this out? And we hired Navigant. They did one study, which was a partial, and it talked about the DOORS model, which our state created and is now held up as a model to many states. They start with our DOORS model, and that is how we figure the individualized budget amount. This bill is going to require $3.9 million in general funds in order to bring the reimbursement rate up to closer to what the actual cost of delivery of services is. So, if you look at the bill on page 1, beginning at the bottom, the department shall establish by rule and regulation a cost-based reimbursement system for providers of services and supplies under the home and community-based waiver programs. And if you recall yesterday in our discussion, there are three distinct and separate waiver programs: the children's waiver, the adults waiver, and the acquired brain injury waiver. And one of the things that this bill is doing, if you are serving like people with like abilities, you will be paid the same amount, no matter what waiver they're being served under. And that's one of the things that CMS asks us to do. And it does go on the top of page 2 and talk about for persons with developmental disabilities or acquired brain injury. The payment system shall use information provided to the department, and it says A, B, C, and D, cost, provider cost data, claims, provider claims data. So it's number one, what the providers report as their cost. Number two, what they actually bill. Number three, the persistent participant's needs assessment data. And that would be the individual budget amount. What does that particular individual need? And the last one is other relevant regional and national data, and that's keeping up with the standards of delivery of services. So on the bottom of page 2, beginning with line 18, the first thing we're doing is establishing a new base period, and that's what this bill does. We're establishing what does it cost to serve people with developmental disabilities or acquired brain injuries. This bill, we looked at several models. In fact, we narrowed it down to a field of 8 models and then narrowed it down to 3 models. And we chose the one that we believe is the most cost-effective to the state. We believe that it is the best delivery model. So, and our committee spent considerable amount of time making those decisions. So this bill would establish that base rate period. And then, at least once every 4 years, but not more than once in every 2 years. So if prices are escalating, we can reevaluate this base in 2 years. Or if things are going along fine, we can wait 4 years to rebase this cost. And then, and I hate to skip around, but I think that we need to go into the amendment now, if you would, please. Beginning on line 20, this is recommendation from our budget office to help clarify how this is going to work. And it says to delete the biennial budget period. What that means is they could use that third year in between 2 and 4. And then it says when it on line 21, the amendment says when a new base period is established, the department, go on to the next line, the department shall submit a budget biennial or supplemental budget request. And that's consistent with, is it going to happen during a budget cycle, or is it going to happen at a 3-year period, or trying to catch up? And that will enable that to happen either one of those two times. And that is to adjust the provider reimbursement rate to the most current base period. Going on to page 3, this cost-based the payment system shall be developed following consultation with the Wyoming Developmental Disability and Acquired Brain Injury Waiver Program service providers, those that are actually on the ground providing those services, with the clients, with their families, and with an expert in cost-based waiver program systems, payment systems. And the department does now and will continue through this bill to retain a contract with this provider or through competitive bidding another one. This system shall be implemented for services and supplies beginning July 1st, 2008, and it has to be contingent upon approval by CMS. and it will require the service and supply providers to provide actual cost of service and supply data to the department and to submit to reasonable audits of the submitted data if requested by the department. And that's pretty much the meat of this. And so, Mr. Chairman, if I could go back to the standing committee and we could vote on that. And what that does is it just clarifies the language of how and when a rebasement system is in place. And I would, without any questions, I'd call for the question on the amendment.
You've heard the motion on standing committee amendment number one. Question having been called, all those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing committee amendment number one has been adopted. We're back on the bill.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. As you can see on the fiscal note, we are at a 50-50 situation with our Medicaid services. So what this will cost the general fund is $3.8 million. This does not cover any cost of living adjustment that may need to happen, and we may be back in the supplemental budget for more to bring that COLA up. But I can promise you that as we looked at these rates, as we watched how the providers collected data, as we inspected some of the sites around the state, we believe that this is one of the best cost-based reimbursement systems that will bring the state back to the principles of the Western Settlement Agreement that the state of Wyoming would develop and support community programs so that these folks can be served in their community as to the best of the ability of the provider. And with that, I'd stand for questions.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Chairman Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Just a couple of comments and perhaps, you know, questions. And I see this as cost-based reimbursement relating to Medicaid. And I wonder, you know, out of all the programs and services we provide in the state of Wyoming with Medicaid, how many of them are reimbursed basically as to cost? I mean, we talk about physicians providing services. And we provide them a percentage of cost. And so I wonder how consistent this is with the other services we provide. The other thing I wanted to point out, and the good representative did point it out, on the bottom of page two, you know, normally we ask an agency if we want to do something like this, you know, if we want to save some money, we say, you know, they're not going to put this in their standard budget. And I understand the intent of the bill is to make it cost-based reimbursement, and the intent of the bill is to make this go on forever. But it's a little concerning to me that we are telling the Department of Health in this case that they shall include this in their budget submittal, a request to adjust provider reimbursement rates based on the most current period. And the Standing Committee amendment goes even further because it's saying you can put it in the supplemental budget too. So you're going to have this not just every biennium. You're going to have it every year where we're directing them, put this in your budget, which basically says put it in your budget and we're going to pay it. We're going to be obligated to pay it. That's just a concern of mine. And then if you look at the fiscal note, and I guess I just urge caution on this because fiscal year 2009 talks about an annual increase multiplied by 50%. And I understand that, yes, we're bringing it up to a certain level, and then we're bringing it up to every level that it increases every year after that. But then look at the last line. Full implementation in fiscal year 2010 and fiscal year 2011 will be $5.1 million, respectfully. My question with regard to that is, it looks like it's an annual increase to me, and I want to know if I'm correct in that or if I'm mistaken, because the line before talks about the 2009 annual increase being a multiplier of 50%, which is huge. And then we go to 10 and 11, and it's $5.1 million. Thank you.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Chairman Phil.
Mr. Chairman, and we looked at this bill on appropriations, and if you look at the Standing Committee amendment, and to answer one comment here, that the Standing Committee, hold on a second.
It's right here. Sorry.
the standing committee amendment addressed that, and the Department of Health would have to submit a request for that for their budget. So it would be seen by the Appropriations Committee. It wouldn't just roll into their standard budget.
Representative Gingrey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I was hoping the good chairwoman of the Select Committee on Developmental Programs could maybe explain a little bit how the current system works. My understanding from talking to some of my providers back in my community is that they're really struggling to even be able to keep their doors open. If you could maybe explain how they get paid at this point in the current structure and why we need this change.
Representative Harvey.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem. Let's start with the first questions about a cost-based reimbursement center and system, and do we do this with other Medicaid providers? Yes, we do. I have to tell you that it is always the struggle, cost versus charges. And so what Medicaid pays is closer to cost than it is what a provider would charge the public. So if you go to the doctor's office, the charge may be $60, but his cost to serve you may only be $30. And so Medicaid pays based on cost and sometimes just a little bit more. This cost-based model was actually modeled after a similar rebasement system that happens in nursing homes. Hospitals have even a different cost-based reimbursement system, and theirs is probably the most complicated based on the diversity of services that they offer. As to the budget, when it's multiplied by 50% beginning in July of 2001, what that means is it's half of a budget year. It's half of a budget year. It's half of our biennial budget. It's not that kind of an increase. The current system of reimbursement right now, as it stands and without this bill, is that providers can negotiate rates with the Department of Developmental Disabilities. And that came about for a multitude of reasons. This system has been in place since the Developmental Disabilities Division was created, and that too was as a result of the Weston lawsuit. So they didn't know exactly what it was going to cost. There are people that have a wide variety of needs. There are people on respirators in community programs. There are people with dual diagnosis. There are people with dual diagnosis, some of them that require two supervisors to one client during certain periods of the day. So everyone had their own list of needs, and the DOORS model didn't cover every single topic. So when there were exceptional needs, the provider would go in and negotiate with the division. Some providers got really good at negotiation. Some just simply took the standard budget. And some of those programs are struggling. Some of the programs that use the negotiated process are going to struggle for a little bit under this system because they're used to having more money to work with. So right now it's been on a cost base with a couple of exceptions, or excuse me, on a negotiated base with a couple of exceptions. In the children's waiver, many of the services are just simply a flat rate, a per-hour rate or a per-service rate. And there again, in the adult system, it was based on a different criteria. In the acquired brain injury system, case managers earned a whole lot more money, but the providers who did the actual services earned considerably less. And what this does is if you are serving similar clients with similar needs, the rate is similar based on the cost to provide that service.
Is there any further discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. Those in favor of Chairman Landon's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report it, do so with a recommendation that House Bill 52 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 52 has passed the House. The next order of business, or Chairman Philp. Where'd Chairman Philp go? The next order of business is House Bill number 141. Chairman Buchanan. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 141, introduced by Representative Stubson, an act relating to civil procedure regarding forcible entry and detainer amendments.
Chairman Buchanan.
Thank you, Mr. Speaker. Pro Tem, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises for it, do so with the recommendation that House Bill 141 do pass, and further move Standing Committee Amendment number 1 to House Bill 141. I'll briefly explain that amendment. As you can see there on page 1, line 7, we basically deleted that entire section there, lines 10 through 15. And what that had dealt with is the bill had sought to say that if no answer is filed in one of these forcible entry and detainer cases, that the defendant could not offer evidence in his case in chief, so to speak, but would be limited to only cross-examination of the plaintiff's witnesses. The committee felt that because those types of cases are actually set before your traditional answer period of 20 days in a civil case, and so it didn't make sense to limit the ability of the defendant to participate in his case in chief and present evidence. So the committee took that part out, and that's what the Standing Committee Amendment did. So I would stand for any questions, and if there are none, I'd call for the question.
You've heard the motion on Standing Committee Amendment. Are you ready for the question? Question having been called, those in favor say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. Standing Committee Amendment number 1 has been adopted. We are back on the bill. Chairman, Representative Stubson.
Mr. Speaker Pro Tem, this is two pretty simple changes but important changes to our forcible entry and detainer or eviction statutes. And just by way of background on how these actions work, when a tenant or, for example, after a foreclosure, a holdover tenant is still in the property or has breached the lease, a landlord has to notify them that the lease has been terminated. The FE&D statute requires that they then serve on them a 3-day notice of quit, leave, and vacate, which basically says you, the tenant, need to get out or we're going to bring a legal action to get you out. If after 3 days the tenant still has refused to vacate the property and remains in the property, then the landlord will file a complaint. That complaint has to be personally served on the defendant, and a hearing is held at least 3, but not more than 12 days from the filing of the complaint. So you have typically, in all cases, you have a period of 3 to 12 days, typically 12 days, after the filing of the complaint before you have the FE&D hearing. What is very common is because the complaint is served personally upon the defendant, sometimes it's hard to track down the defendant. Sometimes the defendants are seeking to avoid service of process. And so that time frame, that 3 to 12 days, often can stretch into 24 days, 36 days. So it's not unusual to have a month between the filing of the complaint and the holding of the when the hearing is held. What this bill seeks to do is step in at that point, because the bill or the statute as it now reads only permits the judge to award rent as damages up through the day of the filing of the complaint. And so you can have a period of 12, 24, 36 days that even if you go to court, you successfully evict the tenant, you don't get any rent for that period of time. And it builds in this sort of weird disincentive in the statute where if I'm a holdover tenant, I have an incentive once the complaint has been filed to avoid service, to put off the hearing, and to not get out of the property because I know under statute I'm not going to be paying rent for any of that time. And so it's sort of this weird anomaly in the law. What this change would allow a judge to do by awarding a rent through the date of the hearing, it creates a proper incentive for the tenant who's held over to get out of the property before you have to go through the hassle of a hearing and utilize the services of a sheriff and that sort of thing. The second part of the bill relates to awards of attorney's fees in these actions, and it's inconsistent across the state. Judges deal with it in different ways. Some will actually award attorney's fees, but many of them will say, you know, you may be entitled to attorney's fees, but in order to get them, I don't have authority under the statute to order them, so I'm going to make you file another complaint in small claims court, utilize more judicial resources and more time to get attorney's fees. This says no, a trial judge can determine that if attorney's fees are available under the lease, that they can award them right there in that action. So it cuts out those extra hoops, the extra use of judicial resources. And an important limitation on this is it's only if it's provided for in the lease. So if I don't have a lease with that tenant where the tenant has said, yeah, I agree, I'm going to pay attorney's fees if you have to evict me from the premises, then there's no availability of attorney's fees. It's only if the tenant has said, yes, I'm going to pay attorney's fees if it comes down to that. And so I think that kind of cuts off on some inconsistency across the state and allows for some conservation of judicial resources. And with that, I'd stand for any questions.
Is there any discussion on the bill? Are you ready for the question? Question being called. All those in favor of Chairman Buchanan's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rise and report, it do so with the recommendation that House Bill number 141 do pass, please say aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 141 is passed the Committee of the Whole. Chairman Philp.
Point of order, Mr. Speaker Pro Tem.
Chairman Philp.
I'd like to introduce some people here, some very fine young people from here in the state of Wyoming. They're taking part in the Wyoming LEAD program. It's an ag leadership training program, and Representative Shepperson and I are alumni of that program, and it's a very good program. Most of them are a lot better than I am, but anyway, and their director, Cindy Gerritsen-Weibel, is up in the gallery as well, and I'd just like you to give them a welcome to the Wyoming legislature.
All right. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 160. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 160, introduced by Representative Edmonds, an act relating to cooperative electric utilities. This bill was referred to Committee Number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, which returned it with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. Ayes, Brown, Gilmore, Illaway, Martin, Meyer, Miller, Korberg, Stepson, Swanitzer, Dan. Signed, Representing Illaway, Chairman.
You have heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, you do so with the recommendation that House Bill 160 do pass, and I further move the adoption of the Standing Committee Amendment. Standing Committee Amendment, ladies and gentlemen, is the standard line that says this act is effective immediately upon completion of all acts necessary and so forth. So I call for the question on the Standing Committee Amendment.
We are on Standing Committee Amendment number 1. The question has been called. All those in favor of Standing Committee number 1 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. The Standing Committee number 1 has passed.
Mr. Chairman, I would turn the explanation of the bill over to the representative from District 12.
Representative Edmonds.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Ladies and gentlemen, I bring you House Bill 160, Cooperative Electric Utilities Rate Regulation. This is the epitome of a simple little bill. If you'll look on lines 15 and 16, what we're doing is we are taking out the words organized under the laws of the state of Wyoming. And this basically deals with the definition of what it is to be a cooperative electric utility. And as I explained in the introduction vote for this bill and in committee, we are doing this just because of some unintended consequences. When you go on to Wyoming Statute 3717-101, This is basically the exemption that cooperative electrics use to not have to go before the Public Service Commission for their rate regulations. We have all our along our borders, we have cooperative electric utilities that are not organized in Wyoming but are serving and have owner members in Wyoming, and they are being required to go through the Public Service Commission. So this is a way in which we can actually have the law do what is intended to do by taking out this definition. And that's the bill. I stand for any questions if we have any. Otherwise, I call for the question.
The question having being called, all those in favor of Chairman Illaway's motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, that it do so with a recommendation that House Bill 160 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, no. House Bill 160 has passed the Committee of the Whole. The next bill for our consideration.
Mr. Chairman, privilege to the floor.
Representative Miller.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. It's not often we have people come all the way from Fremont and Hot Springs and Bighorn County, but we have a few here today. Up in the South Gallery is Cherry Freed, Corey Johnson, Art Otte, and also the mayor of Riverton, John Vincent, and also Aaron Vincent. Please welcome them to the Wyoming Legislature.
Representative Brown. All right. The next bill for our consideration is House Bill 10. I note there are two standing committee amendments. Chairman Childers. I'm sorry. The reading clerk will read the bill.
House Bill 10, introduced by the Travel Committee, an act relating to state parks and historic sites regarding fees. This bill was referred to the Committee Number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, which returned it with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. The bill was re-referred to Committee Number 2, Appropriations, which returned it with a recommendation that it do pass with amendments. On the Committee 6, the ayes were Brown, Childers, Kraft, Davison, Goggles, Eichel, Yeagy, Slater, Thompson, sign represented Childers, Chairman. For number two appropriations, Eisberger, Jones, Jorgensen, Peterson, Philp, Warren, excused, Harshman.
You've heard the reading of the bill. Chairman Childers, what's your pleasure?
Mr. Chairman, I move that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with the recommendation that Bill number 10 do pass, and I further move Standing Committee Amendment Number 1, and I'll turn it over to the good representative from District 14.
Representative Brown.
The second committee amendment is an appropriation amendment, and I think that the chairman of appropriations will take care of it. Maybe he should do it first.
All right, we'll deal with Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 first. Chairman Philp.
Mr. Chairman, I think just a point of order. I think by the rules you have to take them in order.
All right, so we will go ahead. We'll go ahead and is there a call for the question on Standing Committee Amendment Number 1. The question having been called, all those in favor of Standing Committee Number 1 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, same sign. Standing Committee Number 1 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Now we're on to Standing Committee Number 2. Chairman Philp.
Mr. Chairman, I move Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 10, and all it does is require a report from the effects of this bill back to the Appropriations Committee and also to the Joint Travel and Wildlife Interim Committees by June 30th of each year. I would ask for your favorable consideration.
Any further discussion on Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 10? The question having been called, all in favor of Standing Committee Amendment Number 2 to House Bill 10 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed signify by saying no. Standing Committee 2 to House Bill 10 has passed the Committee of the Whole. Chairman Childers.
Mr. Chairman, I will turn the bill over for discussion to the good representative from House District 14.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. This bill is brought before the body to address the fee structure for state parks and historic sites. The changes in the bill are fees, and the first change that we see is on page 3 of the bill. Here we're talking about, I don't know, lines 1 through 6, we're talking about resident annual daily permits. They're called resident annual bucking horse daily permits. So we've got a resident permit, daily permit, an annual fee of $33 for a resident, up from $20, and $53 for a non-resident, up from $40. Then there is a discount on those if they're purchased early, and that's found in lines 11 through 14. If the permits are purchased between January 1 and February 15th of a year, there's a discount so that instead of paying $33 under the new fee schedule, one would pay $27, a resident would, and a non-resident, instead of paying $53, would pay $46. Then the next section of the bill, which begins on line 16, addresses overnight camping permits. And this raises the resident overnight camping permit from $30 to $40, and as the bill's drafted, eliminates a non-resident overnight, an annual non-resident overnight camping permit. The reason we did that is because in committee with the information that was presented to us, we're unable to find any of our comparator states offering an annual non-resident overnight camping permit. They just simply don't. And so we chose to eliminate that. Then the next change appears on page 4 at line 6. And that raises from $5 to $7 the fee for a duplicate annual resident overnight camping permit. Then at lines 7 and 8 on page 6, we have the group fee, and it moves from $75 to $150 for a 24-hour period for the lodges at Kirk Gowdy State Park and Buffalo Bill State Park. Then line 13, we change the fee from $50 to $66 for a 12-hour permit for a picnic shelter or and adjacent grounds at any of our locations. Then finally, there is a new section that begins at line 17 on page 6 and continues through line 15 on line 7, and that is for an added amenities fee. And the purpose of that fee is to give the department extra income when extra amenities are installed in the campground, something that we have very little of now. They would like to do more. The committee heard a lot of testimony about that, and I think agrees that more ought to be done. And so they do have an extra amenities fee that can be charged when they have installed such amenities as electricity or electrical hookups, showers, and camping structures. That is set by rule and regulation but can't exceed $15 per night for electrical hookups and showers or $100 per night for sites with camping structures. Then lines 7 through 15 on page 7 address the amenities fees and how they can be used. It says they're continuously appropriated to pay utility fees and maintenance costs. The standing amendment number 1 changed on line 14 on page 7, changed the word shall to may, And the reason that the committee made that offered that amendment was because as the bill was originally written, it would sweep that account at the end of the fiscal year and sweep everything into the capital construction account. But the agency has ongoing expenses, and they need to have some flexibility, we felt, to leave money in the maintenance account or have it swept into the capital account. So we gave them, by changing shall to may, we gave them the ability to adjust how and hold some of the fees in the maintenance account. If they had a big bill come 2 days after the end of the fiscal year, they wouldn't have any money to pay it with because everything would be swept to the capital account. So we just changed it to May and thought that we'd let them manage it. The money doesn't get away. They either spend it for maintenance or it eventually moves into the capital account, but at a rate they control so that they can have money, funds available for their upcoming expenses. That, Mr. Chairman, is an explanation of the bill, and I stand for questions.
We have three Committee of the Whole amendments. We are on Committee of the Whole Amendment number one. Representative Harvey.
Thank you, excuse me. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Please, you should have two amendments. One, you need to refer to the second one. The original amendment was to give senior citizens a discount for using the parks, and it had a time requirement. The folks from the Parks Department came and talked to me, and I had to change my evil ways and came back with number two. I understand the purpose of this bill is to be able to help our parks, to be able to bring them up to date, to have the money to maintain them, and I certainly support that. But I have to tell you about my old friends that have been calling me on this issue. And I say they're old because of their age, but they're also old because they've been my friends for a really long time. So let's call this the Old Friends Fishing Fund, because there are quite a few gentlemen in my area that go to Buffalo Bill Reservoir and fish. They ice fish. They fish from the bank. They don't use the picnic tables. They don't put trash in the garbage. They don't park in the parking lot. They park along the road. They don't use anything, nor do they cause damage to the park. They just want to go drill their hole in the ice, sit on the bucket, and catch a fish to go home. And that what they've told me is that the new prices just simply outprice their ability to go and have a day off. So I came with this amendment, and the first amendment had quite a few things on it, including a lifetime permit for people older than 65. One of the things that's also corrected in this is that in order to not put the enterprise funds at risk, whatever we do for senior citizens living in state must also be done for senior citizens living out of state. So if you look at the amendment on line 7, it says, after $46, insert and provide one resident or non-resident annual bucking horse daily use permit as applicable to be purchased each year by a person 65 years of age or older for $3 less than the stated price. So that would be true on all of on the first section of the amendment, which is the bucking horse pass. The second for day use. The second one is for overnight use, and there again it's the new price less $3. And then down on lines 21, after foot, insert one resident or non-resident daily use permit as applicable under this paragraph. And this is my old friends fishing, and it's $2 less than the stated price. And what that does is bring it back to the original price of $2. And then the overnight pass, there again, it's just a $2 discount. And in my opinion, this allows these gentlemen to go and use our state parks. If they want to buy an annual pass, okay. If they want to buy a day pass, okay. But we recognize that they've been a part, that they've already paid for their fishing license, which gives them the right to fish. They just want the expenses to be within their means. I would urge an aye vote on this amendment.
Any further discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 1? Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, I speak on and against this amendment simply because the reduction just, frankly, doesn't make a lot of sense to me. It says in the first section on this is a resident annual permit, and I'm in Romanet 1 that begins at the top of page 3. That section, Romanet 1, is for a resident annual daily use permit. That means for an entire year, a person can use one of our state parks daily. They can't camp overnight, but they can come in every day if they'd like. And $33 seems like a really nominal amount when you think about it. For a year's worth of daily use in a state park for $33, or $53 for a non-resident. And if the 33 and 53 is really hurting you, then you can go in between January the 1st and February the 15th, and you can reduce those to 27 and 46. And I frankly, it's going to hurt the department a lot more than is justified, and it just seems so trivial to say, on top of that, for a whole year's worth of daily use, if you're over 65, there are some people in here who are over 65, and you don't have to declare conflict. But to say that $27 is too much and you want a $3 reduction to $25, or if you don't get it purchased within the early part of the year, January 1 to February 15th, to say that $33 is too much for a year's worth of daily use of this park and you want to cut it back to $30 just seems trivial, frankly. And we are talking about a substantial amount of revenue to the department. Then the second part of the amendment goes to Romanet 2 that's on page 3, at the bottom of page 3, and that's talking about an annual resident overnight camping permit. Again, this is a permit to camp overnight every night of the year if you want. It's an annual permit. Overnight camping, as often as one wants, for $40. And somehow we're saying that people that are 65 or older need $3 off. Instead of $40, they can only pay $37. And when you look at the value that's involved there, it just escapes me. And then I just received a reminder here that seniors get a free fishing license to boot. Now, the next part of the amendment then goes to page 4, and that is Romanet 3, which concerns non-resident daily use, single days, and it's $4. Well, I'm sorry, it's daily use, and it's $4 for a resident, $6 for a non-resident. And this wants to take $2 off of that. Again, and that's $2 off whether one's a resident or a non-resident. All you have to do to qualify for this is reach age 65. There's no means testing. There's no nothing. And it's not a large amount of money. It's $2 off of $4 or $2 off of $6. And the $4, if you're going very much, the $33 is you go 8 days in a year, you're about at the break-even point. I don't know why you're paying that anyway. You're paying $33 for an entire year's use, but somehow we have to have a $3 reduction. And then finally, on page 5, which is in Romanet 6, we're talking about $6 a night for residents, $11 a night for non-residents for overnight camping. And again, this would ask that be reduced by $2 for someone 65 years of age or older. Now, the other thing that's significant about the way this amendment is written is that it's when I said $3 or $2, that's $3 off the stated price or $2 off the stated price. So that would mean that if the prices change, if we change them again, that's locked in. It's not a percentage. It's just a fixed number of dollars off of that fee. And I just have a hard time imagining somebody in such financial straits that this is a necessity for them. And I think our department, our state parks and historical sites people really need some additional revenue. And they've come to us with some budget figures and demonstrated to our satisfaction that they really need the additional revenue. The amenities thing is especially dear to their heart. But I would ask you to vote down this amendment because I just don't see the benefit there for the individuals compared to the harm that it's going to do to the department's fee structure.
Further discussion on committee of the whole, amendment number one, Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Fellow legislators, I would certainly rise in opposition to this amendment. The whole purpose of this legislation, you have to stand back. We've heard all kinds of mathematical computations and things that's been brought forward by the good representative from House District 14. But what that proves to show, it casts quite a burden on the department to sort this stuff all out and keep it straight. And people have to prove their identification and they have to prove their age. And I'm far from being a senior citizen, but one day I may be there. And those things all come to pass. But the whole purpose is to help our state parks. I've spoken with these good people over the period of time. We have two of these state parks in my county, and there is extensive visitation to those things. The facilities definitely need an upgrade. I do not think these proposed rate increases in this bill are onerous. They're certainly in line with the services that are rendered, and I would certainly recommend that we do not make this a convoluted affair by supporting this proposed amendment on and against it.
Any more discussion on the amendment? We are on committee of the whole amendment number one. All those in favor of committee of the whole amendment number one, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the whole amendment number one has failed. We are now on committee of the whole amendment number two, Representative Semlick.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move committee of the whole amendment number two to House Bill 10. You'll find this amendment applies to page 3, line 18 of the bill. There is some stricken language in there that we're asked to consider in this bill where it removes the yearly camping permit from non-residents. And part of the testimony that we heard on this bill is that there wasn't any surrounding states that had such a provision in their law for people from non-residents who want to camp in state parks. And I don't dispute that. That's probably true. But I would call out to the attention of the members that during the introduction, I believe it was, there was a regional comparison chart that was distributed for our consideration. And if you can find that, or perhaps you can't, but I'll just point out to you that the camping fees for our surrounding states for non-residents is the same as residents. So I'd like to have you consider for just a moment the possibility of accepting this amendment by increasing the fees. I think these fees for our park users are appropriate, but I would want you to consider for a moment the amount that we are considering to increase for our non-resident campers. We've taken out the yearly, and we've increased the daily by $2. You know, I think that's fine. But in our border park communities around this state, we find that we have campers coming in from out of state and spending maybe a couple weeks and maybe perhaps a couple different times a year. That's not unusual up in my area at one of our state parks. And with a fee increase that we have proposed to change in this bill, their fees have gone now from $60 a year if they spent the time 2 weeks twice a year at different times, their fees would triple. And it's possible that with the retired non-resident campers that come to our park, the unintended consequence might be that they might stay home and maybe not spend as much time. And while I believe the fee increase is justified, I just caution us to go after our non-residents in our border communities and ask them to increase their rate if they want to stay an extended period of time. Now, the daily increase, I don't have any problem with that. But if we are observing that they are spending an extended period of time there, then their fees are going to go up considerably. So I've just asked that we to reinstate the stricken language and go from allow them to continue to have the non-resident annual fee and move it up to $100. So, Mr. Chairman, that is my amendment.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I would ask you to resist this amendment. I don't want to name these states, but maybe by going around the points of the compass, you can pick up with me on what states don't offer this fee. On this list that I have, we're the only one that offers an annual non-resident camping permit. This is an annual permit to come in as many times as one wants. So I could just say south, west, north, east, northeast, and I've got east and west, north and south, and northeast. None of them allow this kind of a permit. So what does that tell you? What are they doing to us? That means that if our residents want to go to any of those states, they are not permitted. There's not available to them an annual camping permit. So we said, well, who's the sucker in this shell game? And obviously it's us. And their residents are getting a benefit in our state that our residents aren't offered in those states. And so for that reason, we eliminated this thing. It makes a big difference in our parks. And believe me, somebody that's from out of state for the fee that's being suggested in this amendment, $100 a year, somebody from out of state who's close, maybe close to the state line, can roll into our state and use our facilities for a tremendous number of nights in a year, and our residents are denied the same privilege in their state. So I'd ask you to vote against this amendment and do unto others as they're doing unto us.
Representative Peterson.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I likewise rise in opposition to this amendment. Let's stay with what the committee did. The committee heard a lot of testimony here, and this bill is ready to go. And when you do this change or modification is being proposed, I certainly would urge extreme caution and reject the amendment.
Representative Gilmore.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I'm not sure how I am on this amendment. Something that I realize, though, now is that tourism is a really big issue. It's also getting to be a very competitive thing. And I don't necessarily think that, you know, in trying to gouge tourists from out of town or out of state is the tool we need in, you know, to encourage them to come. I'd like them to come because they like our state. They can stay here, spend their money at our restaurants, stores, and maybe not be gouged when they spend the night at a campsite. Thank you.
Any other comments or discussion on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2? Oh, Representative Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chairman, I just remind you that some of the parks down in this part of the state have a very large number of out-of-state people that come to the parks, and a lot of the repairs and cleanup that's required by state parks comes from those out-of-state people. So, that in itself is another reason that the rates are higher, but for an annual fee and no other annual fee in any of the adjacent states, it makes sense that we did what we did. And again, I'd resist the amendment.
Representative Okay. The question having been called, we are on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Those opposed, signify by saying no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 2 has failed. We are now on Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3. Representative Semlich.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I move Committee of the Whole Amendment Number 3 to House Bill 10. This amendment is found in page seven, line 5 of the bill. That section deals with the amenities and the additional fees that can be charged for amenities. I believe at this time there are no parks that have these amenities in them, and I know that there is an interest on the part of the department to provide these amenities. And what this amendment would do, I'll just read it, the department shall not charge an additional amenity fee under this paragraph for added amenities when those specific added amenities are otherwise offered within the park area or site by an authorized concessionaire. Members of the House, the purpose of bringing you this amendment, even though at the present time it really is kind of a moot issue, my concern here is that the concessionaires who are providing an important service to our state parks, they're really having some difficult circumstances, you know, in their businesses. The seasons are short. They're seasonal at the best. You get some bad weather. And one of the things that would in some cases could be a death knell to them is that the state park could come in and provide these amenities and these services and compete with them. So this is just an attempt to say that, you know, not that we shouldn't go ahead and provide these added amenities, but if the concessionaire is offering these amenities, then the state park, the department cannot charge for them. And, again, it's just trying to keep our concessionaires whole. I tell you, my experience is they're just hanging on by a thread out there. And I don't think we want a public entity competing with our private sector who are struggling. So I just ask for you to consider it. Thank you.
Representative Brown.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. I have a great deal of respect for the representative from House District 1, and I hate to keep talking against his amendments. I'm hopeful that he'll bring some pretty soon that I can talk in favor of, but this isn't one of them. Mr. Chairman, if you think about this and what the potential is, this amendment would provide the ability for some concessionaires on the boundaries of our state parks to hold our state hostage. And the way they can do that is simply build a few facilities with amenities, or perhaps tell us they're going to build a few facilities with amenities, and by doing that, they blackball the state from any ability to improve its facilities in these parks. And I don't think that's the direction we want to go. Now, you know, there's the converse argument that the state will compete with them, and all I can say to that is that there is a limitation on how much the state can charge for these amenities. We can't just go hog wild, and we won't. And maybe a little competition will force us to keep them down, but the competition is a two-way street. And maybe it helps the concessionaire keep his rates down as well as the state. But the big problem is we don't have amenities at these parks. And we need to do something about that. And this is something that's run on an enterprise fund, and it ought to be self-supporting. And we need some way to go forward, install these amenities, which the surveys that our people are doing all the time, exit surveys, show that people want. And if we're going to have economic development and if we're going to have tourists, we've got to install some of these amenities. We saw a lot of evidence in committee about the amenities in these state parks and adjoining states, and some of them are quite elaborate. And by comparison to those, many of our state parks are primitive, and so we need to do something about that. Now, the department has also shared with us some information where they've tried this. They worked with the Bureau of Reclamation to get some amenities at Keyhole Marina a number of years ago, and the master plan for Buffalo Bill State Park when the dam was raised called for setting aside land for a concessionaire to develop it, and it's never happened. So we might have an isolated incident someplace where there is a concessionaire, but we can point to just as many incidents where we've made the opportunity available to concessionaires and they haven't taken us up on it. In the end, though, the thing that really troubles me about this is that it would allow the concessionaires to hold the state hostage and block our state from ever installing these amenities. And we're only talking about electrical hookups and showers and camping structures. We're just talking about basic stuff. And I don't think we want to be in a position where a concessionaire can start to offer a few of those and block us from doing what we need to do in order to develop our state parks. So I would ask you to vote against this amendment.
Chairman Childers.
Well, Mr. Chair, if you read that section, Roman X 14, each one of those fees, it says may. It doesn't say shall. So the department has just said, if they do establish a fee at a campground, this is what it is. Again, against the amendment.
Okay, question having been called, we are on Committee of the Whole Amendment number 3. All those in favor of Committee of the Whole Amendment number 3 signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Opposed, no.
No.
Committee of the Whole Amendment number 3 has failed. Any other discussion? Question has been called. All those in favor of Representative Childers' motion that when the Committee of the Whole rises to report, it do so with recommendation that Bill number 10, that House Bill number 10 do pass, please signify by saying aye.
Aye.
And those opposed, no.
No.
House Bill 10 has passed Committee of the Whole.
Mr. Chairman.
Mr. Majority Floor Leader.
Chairman, I move that the House rise and sit again at 1:30.
We'll be in recess until 1:30. I'm sorry, committee announcements. Chairman Illaway.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 7, Corporations, Elections, and Political Subdivisions, will meet right now in House 18, and we'll discuss Senate File 4, Foreclosure Redemption Period, Senate File 11, Engrossed Subdivisions, Large Acreage Parcels, and it doesn't look like we're going to have time for Senate File 48, Reporting Requirements.
Chairman Edwards.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Committee number 8, Transportation, Highways, Military Affairs, and Homeland Security will meet this afternoon upon adjournment to discuss House Bill 135, Fuel Disclosure, House Bill 136, Diet Fuel Enforcement, House Bill 130, Establishment of Public Roads, and House Bill 142, Driver Services Fees.
Chairman Childers.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number 6, Travel, Recreation, Wildlife, and Cultural Resources, will meet Friday morning at 8 a.m. or 9 a.m. in H-10 to consider the two bills, Senate File 2, Select Natural Resource Funding Committee Chairmanship, and Senate File 3, Game and Fish Funding.
Chairman Lockhart.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 9, Minerals, Business, and Economic Development, will meet tomorrow morning at 8 o'clock in room H-18 to consider Senate File 44, Residential Mortgages Practices Act, and Senate File 57, Hospital Participation in State Retirement.
Chairman Philp.
Mr. Chairman, your committee number 2, Appropriations, will meet right now on noon recess in room 204 to discuss the following bills, and they're all re-referred bills. House Bill 108, Railroad Quiet Zones. House Bill 153, Economic Development Account 2. House Bill 12, Veterans Mental Health Appropriations. And any other re-referred bills that we may have time for. Thank you, Mr. Chairman.
Chairman McComey.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Mr. Chairman, your committee number 4, Education, will meet upon noon recess Friday in room H-10. Where we will discuss Senate File 61, School Finance Recapture Payments, Senate File 17, Engrossed School Facilities Infrastructure Costs, and Senate File 22, Engrossed School Facilities Amendments, if time allows.
Mr. Speaker.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. Your committee number 12 on rules and procedures will meet upon adjournment this evening, February 21st, in the basement conference room to discuss the following bills. House Bill 69, the revisers bill. House Joint Resolution 1, initiative and referendum requirements. House Bill 42, constituent service allowance. And House Bill 75, legislative per diem.
All right, the committee of the whole will stand at recess until 1:30.